I was so pleased that we were invited to the funeral. It was in a small church. And we came early, thankfully, because the place was wall to wall before it was done. And the service started, and I happened to look over to my right, and the door opened on the side, and in walks Richard Nixon, and sits down in the first row right at the end. Apparently, they had saved a spot for him. Nobody else around him. And the door closed, and he sat through the service. You could have heard a pin drop, and all of a sudden, the heads are all turning. And when the service was done, he got up, walked out the door, and the door closed. Can you conceive of a president going to somebody else's funeral like that?
By the time Bryce Harlow retired in 1978, he had compiled one of the longest and most diverse Washington resumes in history. His career in politics spanned 6 decades, 9 different presidential administrations, and 21 U.S. Congresses. He served in the White House at one of its highest points during the prosperity of Eisenhower, as well as one of its lowest during the dark days of Watergate. He helped to define the very idea of the ultimate Washington insider. Harlow was able to give both his leaders and his protégés the kind of wisdom and perspective that only a Washington veteran of his stature could provide. U.S. Senator John Warner met Bryce Harlow early in his career, and he remembered a meeting where Harlow imparted this unique Washington wisdom to a room full of Washington newcomers.
When Nixon first got elected in 1968, he brought in a lot of people from California. And Bryce Harlow was sitting around there where all these newcomers were coming into town. And somehow they expressed a total contempt, if not disdain, for the Congress of the United States. And began to speak out in rather derogatory terms. And this went on from time to time in meetings at the White House. And finally one day Bryce got up and said, I want to say something. And when he spoke, people listened. He said, it's been my experience that perhaps some of your observations about Congress are true. But I'll tell you one thing. Congress has an enormous amount of power under the Constitution. And if you begin to push it around and kick it around, all of a sudden it can pull back and lurch out and strike you with an enormous force. And sometimes throughout history it has really undone administrations. And I've seen that. And his wisdom was in a few simple words, but he was right.
The impact that Bryce Harlow had is truly immeasurable. The number of laws and policies that he helped to shape will forever be a secret in Washington, and by most accounts, that's exactly how we wanted it to be. Presidential historian Stephen Hess.
That was the nature of his career, I guess I'd have to say. That's the way he wanted it. I guess he could have gone back to Oklahoma and ran for Congress or whatever suited his personal needs. But he was really a very unassuming person. That seemed to suit his lifestyle and the way he wanted to make his mark.
Longtime political reporter Mark Shields.
He was a public servant in the true sense, truest sense. But people who never met Bryce Harlow or never meet him or weren't lucky enough to be alive when he was such an influential figure. And there's no reason you would have, because he was not a self-promoter. He was a man who had a very quiet voice, just the opposite of one thinks of as a major Washington lobbyist.
Former Oklahoma Congressman and U.S. Ambassador James Jones reflected on one reason why Harlow was able to influence so many Washington power brokers for such a long period of time.
He projected an image that was not threatening. In other words, in this town or in finance in New York or whatever, there are a lot of peacocks around, and Bryce Harlow was not the peacock. He was the one who was providing information and assisting the peacocks, so to speak. So he was not threatening that he was going to take center stage away from the ones he was trying to bring, the power brokers he was trying to bring together.
Although Bryce Harlow never held an elected office himself, he was often seen right beside those who did, especially those in the White House. And it was this close proximity which helped to make him one of the most powerful and influential figures of his era. U.S. Senator Lamar Alexander spoke about the importance of the White House staffer in modern American politics.
A White House senior staff member in the modern presidency is a very important figure, because it is true that power in Washington depends upon how close you are to the president, not on where your office is or what your job is. I mean, you can be the Secretary of State and be way down the line in terms of importance in Washington if your relationship with the president isn't close. But the people who are closest to the president and therefore closest to power and therefore very influential are the senior White House aides. There are a handful of them who ought to be studied, and if for nothing else, to see how one does his job. And there was Arthur Burns, there was Henry Kissinger, there was Bryce Harlow.
Dr. Henry Kissinger recounted some of the lessons that future generations of presidential advisors can learn from studying Bryce Harlow.
Well, first of all, to respect your country and to know you're doing something important. Secondly, to understand that the president is a very harassed man and that he needs an opportunity to get some distance. And therefore, you have an obligation to him if he has shown confidence in you that you will help him exercise that position with some sense of perspective.
Harlow's influence, of course, wasn't limited to serving in the government. His abilities, experience, and reputation for integrity made him the ideal person to help pioneer the emerging intersection of business and government. Washington lobbyist and Harlow friend Mike Baruti reflected on Harlow's role at the center of this important new intersection.
One thing that we all remember about him, and that is the ease with which he moved back and forth from government to business. He saw them almost as seamless in a good way. That is, he saw the business of this town as seeking good policy, and he thought that good policy was good politics. He saw a seamlessness to the business of government and the business and the business of government relations. That always struck me as an enviable career to have.
Former lobbyist and current U.S. Senator Robert Bennett also spoke about Harlow's contributions to the lobbying profession.
His greatest contribution, I think, is the standards that he set at the beginning of this profession, and then the vast number of people whom he trained, either directly under his tutelage, or the people who just came into his orbit, like me.
In spite of the demands placed on his time by the jobs that he held, Harlow still always found time for his family and made sure they were well prepared for their own careers. His daughter Peggy remembered some practical advice he once gave to her about the unpredictable nature of a career in Washington.
He always said to me, as I was growing up and looking for jobs and doing that kind of thing, never to put myself in a situation where I had to compromise my principles out of economic need. He thought that was an extremely important factor to take into account as I planned. He said he himself trained as a secretary. He did that because if all else failed, he could go take dictation.
Bryce Harlow may have become the insider's insider within Washington, but throughout his long career, he never lost his general affection for people, regardless of their place in life. We end on three final reflections about this from Bryce Harlow's family: his daughter Trudy Harlow, his son Larry Harlow, and his daughter Peggy Harlow Knight, each of whom have had their own careers in Washington politics.
My father was an optimist, and I think that's essential to thinking that people are basically good. And he did believe people are basically good, and that they really want, at the bottom of everything, what they really want is something good. You know, my father used to get in taxi cabs and have wonderful conversations with taxi cab drivers. And he'd talk to people on the street. He enjoyed people. He enjoyed people's stories. He enjoyed people's perspectives on life. His foundational belief that people were basically, as a whole, were basically good, that they wanted good. I don't think that ever faltered. Even having gone through Watergate and dealt with a lot of difficult people through his life of various kinds, I don't think that ever was challenged in his heart.
What he always used to say to me was, always understand the other person's point of view. You may not agree with it, but they have a right to have it. And I think he just enjoyed people. I think he had a strong belief in the value of the individual. And I think he had a really strong belief in the foundation of the American Republic that recognized the worth of the individual. That's in essence what he believed the country was all about.
If your goals are honest and that you support the American experiment economically and politically, it doesn't take schemes, conspiracies, and other nefarious means. You can achieve those goals by acting honestly. He could poke fun at circumstances, but he didn't poke fun at other people. And his sense of humor was just fabulous. So no matter what was happening, no matter how dire, no matter how sad, there was always a pixie in him that he could pull on to ease situations. And I think all of those things set him apart.